Hello, and welcome to Cheese Flicks with Logan and Andrew, a show where two friends crawl through a river of bad movies and hope to come out clean on the other side.
Welcome to Cheese Flicks. This is the podcast where me and Logan talk about the cheesiest movies that we can find. This week, this episode, we'll be going over The Beaver, starring Mel Gibson and Jodie Foster.
Yep.
Yarp.
Yes, The Beaver. It's on Netflix. On this show, we try to, this is just for people tuning in for the first time. If so, welcome. We try to review cheesy movies. Sometimes good ones slip through. Sometimes really bad ones slip through. But you know, we've had a pretty good run so far of getting nice cheesy movies that are kind of the movies you want to watch with friends or just having a bad movie night, which are fun to have sometimes. This has become. I feel like I'm a wealth of information now. So if anybody ever has any recommendations, feel free to ask. If you're tuning in, we follow us on Twitter. We have several social media profiles. We have Facebook, Twitter, and I think that's it. But we also have an email address, hello@cheeseflicks.com. Email us suggestions, or you know, maybe eventually we'll even come out with some kind of polling ability, so you can choose, vote for your next for our next film to review. But anyway, this one is The Beaver, and who suggested this?
So this was a recommendation from my aunt and uncle, Julian Wayne. They actually recommended this quite a while ago. I remember we were at like a family dinner and I was talking to him, you know, like podcasters do, basically harping on their family to listen to our podcast. And I was talking about how horrible David and Goliath is. If anyone who's been listening to us for any amount of time has certainly heard us bitch about David and Goliath, which was an abomination of a movie. And in that conversation, they brought up this movie, The Beaver, and talked about how it was the worst movie they'd ever seen. I think my aunt said she fell asleep. And Wayne just, I'm not 100% sure they made it all the way through the movie. I know my aunt didn't, but I don't think Wayne did either. And just they were like, oh, if you think David and Goliath is bad, then this is awful. So I jotted it down. I'm like, oh, we'll see about that, because David and Goliath was pretty awful. But it wasn't really available anywhere, and we like to try to have our Cheese Flicks movies be something easily accessible for anyone who wants to watch them. So about a month or so ago, I saw that Netflix added The Beaver on there, so I thought, what perfect timing. Now we can finally get to actually what was really one of our first recommendations that we ever got. So that's why I picked it.
And this movie has a lot of big names in it. I guess at the time they weren't necessarily big names, but I was surprised to see like Jennifer Lawrence is in this and Anton Yelchin. Rest in peace.
Yeah, and something to kind of tack on to what you said earlier is that we're looking for cheesy movies, and cheesy movies doesn't mean bad movies, and it doesn't mean good movies either. It's like a whole separate thing, because you can have a good cheesy movie like Turbo Kid, or you can have a bad cheesy movie like a lot of other ones that we
watched. Like Shark Lake, or David and Goliath was very bad. But I don't even know if that's even cheesy though. That just falls into that should never have been made, and is a pestilence on this world that we live in.
See, as we'll get to The Beaver really didn't turn out to be much of a cheesy movie, and whether or not it was a good movie, I guess, could be debated.
Yeah.
Or we'll talk about that. But it's not really cheesy. It's the acting in it overall is probably better than most of the other, if not all of the other movies that we've seen. I mean,
yeah, there's definitely some like high quality actors in this film. I mean, like I definitely can't pan anybody. Like, nobody in this movie was like, oh my gosh, they're just phoning in or anything like that. But on the flip side, there's a lot to talk about, I guess. So, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't call it cheesy either, but that's okay. I mean, we don't necessarily always have to review cheesy movies. I think that's kind of what the aim of it. But, fan recommendations, we don't actually get a chance to, vet a lot of the stuff that we do anyway, and it's always kind of fun to do a wild card movie like this.
Another thing I'd like to throw out there is, I was thinking about this as I was watching it. I was trying to watch it with, as a blank slate, because I had this impression going in of, all right, this movie is going to be 90 minutes of I want to blow my brains out, it's so bad, because of the, that was basically what it was told to me to be by the people who recommended it. So I think maybe I might have actually enjoyed it more than you did, because it exceeded my expectations. Again, now, to saying it exceeded, that's relative, so my expectations were in the basement. And this one was better than that. I'm not saying it was, award-winning or anything, but...
Yeah, so I guess some, notes I took about the movie is that its budget was $21 million. It box office grossed only $6.4 million. It's got a pretty okay rating, 61% critics rating in Rotten Tomatoes and a 55% user rating, which is better than I would have given it on either side. This happened, and we can talk about this in the review, I suppose, but this could, this did come out around the time that Mel Gibson had a public freakout. This was the second time, though. So, the background of this story, which is kind of an interesting take on this film, The Beaver is about Mel Gibson's character who is dealing with some emotional issues and relies upon a puppet that he is he talks through the puppet as a separate character, person thing that's his own mind, obviously, but it gives him a distance from, I guess himself having to deal with problems. He lets the beaver take care of a lot of his issues. So, interesting take on, therapy, I guess, that he kind of discovers. But I was going somewhere with this. Oh, the movie itself, it's kind of it's hard not to look at it and say, oh, well, actually, funny story about this character, because Mel Gibson in real life had a similar issue, because he was arrested. I think there was mug shots. He was doing a lot of anti-Semitic ranting drunkenly, calling names to, I don't remember exactly the context, but I remember it was a lot of negative press. So this movie was obviously sort of an olive branch from Jodie Foster to Mel Gibson, because she directed the film. And unfortunately, right before this movie came out in theaters, Mel Gibson had another big blow up where he was ranting drunkenly at his ex-wife, which was also released to the media, and it was really bad. So I think that's another reason why the movie didn't do so great either. It's because right before the movie was released, there was a lot of negative press around Mel Gibson, again, for doing similar negative things. So anyway, that's just a kind of a intro to the movie before we get started. So I guess at this point, we'll throw out that, hey, if you've never seen this before, it's on Netflix, so go watch it. This point on, we're going to spoil it. So we're going to walk through the whole plot and kind of give our thoughts and whatnot, so prepare yourselves.
Brace yourselves. So, yeah. So, it starts off basically Mel Gibson, whose character is Walter something or other. Where'd my notes go? Walter.
Who needs notes?
Walter Black.
Yeah, it's Walter Black, yeah.
He's floating in a pool, in an inflatable raft. He's fully clothed, and there's voiceover talking about how he's basically hopelessly depressed. You're seeing him go through his medicine cabinet with dozens of pill bottles. He sleeps all day, and then eventually his wife, played by Jodie Foster, basically kicks his ass to the curb and says she's tired of putting up with him.
Yeah.
So he packs up the car and drives away. You get a little introductions to the rest of the family. The older son, who's Anton Yelchin, Porter Black, you know, he's kind of a, I don't know quite how to describe him. Actually, I'll say, it's funny because there's kind of two stories that go through this movie. There's sort of the story of Walter and his depression and what leads into the beaver and all that. And then there's like a B storyline between Porter, the oldest son, and a girl he goes to school with, played by Jennifer Lawrence. And I'll say right off the bat that I thought that was, like, that storyline actually kind of kept me watching the movie. I thought that was a lot more interesting, and I just between those two, than kind of the weirdness that goes on with Mel Gibson.
Yeah, I mean, it's I would agree. I think I did. Well, first off, I'll start it off. I didn't really like this movie at all. I thought that it was. I think the reason why is right from the beginning. I mean, it's not right from the beginning. They set it up okay. I'm kind of intrigued by, okay, this is interesting. Obviously, you know, Mel Gibson is a great actor, despite the fact that he's obviously got some issues in real life. And then I was already thinking, like, this is kind of an interesting, like, parallel to his real life issues in a way. Like, maybe he's got problems with drugs and alcohol and, you know, prescription medicine or whatever. And this is an interesting way to kind of maybe garner some empathy. Unfortunately, because of, you know, what happened right before this movie came out, I mean, that kind of didn't work out.
I wonder if this, because if Jodie Foster directed it, somebody else wrote it.
Right, yeah, she didn't write it, but she directed it.
So, yeah, I mean, kind of getting ahead of it, but, like, I thought it was, I don't want to say okay. Like, I'm not going to say, it's not good, it's just there. Like, it's not, there wasn't any, like, giant plot holes or, like, terrible writing. It's just, it's weird. Like, I mean, it's a weird sort of surreal type movie, or, you know, like, there's some other movies that I've seen that it kind of reminded me of, like, it's almost like this movie is happening in an alternate reality where people just aren't acting normally.
Yeah, the reason that we're talking about this is because he gets kicked out of his house in the beginning of the movie. You get kind of a background. He's depressed. His kid's selling. You find also his kid, his name's Porter, who's played by Anton Yelchin, is selling, like, papers to kids for, like, $200 a pop. He's apparently really good at, like, faking, cheating on behalf of other people for money so they could get better grades. And that's kind of, you know, his negative, I guess, side that he's got to work through. And unfortunately, Mel Gibson's kicked out of his house, or I should say Walter is. And then he's, like, dumping shit in a garbage can that he's got in his trunk because he kind of kicked out with all of his stuff. But then I don't know if it was either part of his stuff or he just finds it in the garbage.
I don't think it was part of it. He goes to the liquor store and he's, like, stocking up. He's getting, like, a whole bunch of liquor.
Okay.
And then he goes to put it in his car and he can't fit the liquor in his car because he's got all his stuff. So he's basically decided that liquor is of the highest priority, and he starts dumping stuff into a dumpster, and he sees the beaver puppet, and then he leaves, and then he stops, like, before he gets back into his car and goes back to get the beaver out of the garbage.
Gotcha.
Which was kind of weird. It's like it was calling to him or something, but he isn't, like, he's not intoxicated right now, which he will be shortly. Based on the giant box of liquor that he just bought. So it's just kind of weird that, like, up till now, everything's kind of normal in terms of, like, the way people are acting and behaving.
Yeah.
But he gets the puppet, he goes back to this hotel room or one bedroom apartment, whatever it is, and he's just getting, like, shmammered.
Yeah.
He's not even...
He's got a bottle of vodka in one hand and the puppet on the other.
Well, he doesn't even have the puppet, I don't think, does he? Or not on his hand?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he's playing with his puppet. He's just getting, like, totally ripped. And then he decides he's going to try and kill himself. That's right. Because he goes into the bathroom, and he tries to tie his necktie around the shower rod, which...
Yeah.
But he's pretty hammered, because you're like, well, that's not going to work. There's no way that thing's going to support your neck. But he's tying it up there with his beaver puppet. And, of course, it breaks. Then his next solution, he's going to jump over the
balcony.
Off the balcony. And he ends up, the beaver starts talking to him.
Yeah, like, right before he jumps, you hear, like, an oi or something. And then he, like, falls off the chair he or whatever, the balcony he was up on. And then, like, the TV falls on him and he blacks out.
Right. And so when he wakes up, all of a sudden, it's basically, it's almost like he has a split personality. So you have Walter, and then you have the Beaver. But the Beaver is obviously, it's Walter. He's the one doing the talking. It's not even like a ventriloquism act. I mean, Mel Gibson is clearly the one voicing the Beaver, and acknowledges that it's him. And basically, this Beaver's going to be the one. He's like a self-help Beaver.
Yeah. And also this Beaver is also the same voice that was narrating in the beginning of the movie that you're kind of right. Real, it's kind of like this raspy Australian sounding voice. Fun fact about Mel Gibson, when at 12 years old he moved to Australia and I think lived there until he was a young adult. So that's why he has a really strong Australian accent. And I guess I'll say this here. This is exactly the point where I checked out. Like when I saw Mel Gibson talking to himself while mimicking the hand movements and the mouthing of the Beaver talking back to him while he's talking to the Beaver. I don't know if they could have done this better. I don't know if there's it wasn't a ventriloquist act. This was he's just talking in a different voice. To when he's talking as a Beaver, and then he's like this meek, sheepish guy when he's himself. But it was so ridiculous. I just couldn't take it seriously at all. And then on top of that, they really went crazy with this accordion music throughout the film. And I really noticed it right here where I'm hearing this, like, I don't even know how to describe it, but it was like a circus, or I don't know, but it was just that there was this accordion music that reminded me of like a gypsy whatever, I don't know, and it's throughout the movie, and every time I hear it I want to punch a wall, because they just like, hey, let's throw in some weird accordion music to like just mix the mood up.
One thing I remember thinking is they kept showing this shot of with both Walter and the Beaver in the frame, and so like Walter would speak and then the Beaver would speak, but the Beaver's mouth is just moving and Walter is talking in a different accent. And I remember thinking at first, I was like, you know what they should have done is they should have cut to each face, so like when you see the Beaver talking, you're not seeing Walter talking.
Yeah,
you know, of almost like it's he is its own character. But then I guess they wanted to make it clear that he's not hearing a voice. Like, he's just doing it. And then the other thought that I had early on when he fell and hit his head, I was like, oh, so it's just, this is all going to be because of a head injury. But then I think about it, I was like, no, because the Beaver starts talking to him before he does that. Like, he's just drunk. Like, yeah. This is all just like, he's like schizophrenic and nobody ever addresses it. So...
Yeah. It brings up this point too. It's obviously this is trying to be a serious movie, I think, about mental illness. I just feel like I couldn't get over the fact that this is just so bizarre.
Yeah,
and nobody would play along like they do in this movie.
Yeah, I kind of feel like it was too. Yeah, it shouldn't have been trying to be as serious. They should have gone kind of full comedy with it, and I think it would have been better. But it was. Everybody else is like a serious person, but he's like a cartoon character.
Yeah,
you know, he
and they all go along with it, which is just that would never happen,
right?
He would be committed immediately.
Right. And the only explanation that they give for why that doesn't happen is basically when he gets home and he's talking to his wife, he tells his wife that he is starting to see his doctor again, like his psychiatrist, and that this whole Beaver shtick is like basically prescription therapy.
Yeah.
Is that this is supposed to help him, and the wife like is obviously kind of hesitant about it, but she kind of lets it go at first because he's obviously in like a better mood and he's like talking to his son, which he wasn't doing before, which was something they kind of say was obviously bothering the younger son, is that his dad never really bothered with him. And so she's kind of like apprehensive, but like, I guess we'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
And then, so then he goes to work. I'm getting ahead, because there's, that happens, and then we kind of jump into this, some of the stuff with the older son.
Yeah, she, I think they you kind of find out that J-Law's character, who is Nora, she's a cheerleader.
I only referred to her as J-Law in my notes.
Yeah, that's same here in my notes. But and to be fair, I referred to Anton as Star Trek guy. Just whatever.
You know he's dead, right?
Yeah,
that's so sad.
So they meet. They meet up because she needs. She's like this popular, obviously, person in the school. I was cheerleader. Watch out. And this is again where I ding the movie pretty heavily. Though I do like the story, you know, this is an interesting part. You kind of figure out that she needs him to write her a speech because she's the valedictorian, and she can't really handle it right now. She doesn't really know what to say. She's really smart, obviously, because she's a valedictorian. But there's kind of this, you know, I think Porter tries to kind of be a badass, and he's like, I think you're lazy if you think, you know, you think I'm going to do it or whatever, because you're obviously you don't need my help if you're the valedictorian. And she's like, here's a bunch of papers I've been writing. It's over like 400 hours worth of work. So you can call me whatever you want, but don't call me lazy. I need this because I can't do it myself. Whatever you want, blah, 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 blah. I think she gives him her number, and then they kind of like part ways, and I guess you kind of get this, you know, kind of a little tension there, because obviously Porter's surprised that, you know, Nora's even talking to him, and now that he's getting a little bit, and he gets all this information from her, which is obviously going to help him write the speech. She hands over like tons of papers about her, I guess, you know, maybe some autobiographical stuff she had to write for school, because I think they kind of explained that. But so he's got to use that material to write a big impressive valedictorian speech. But anyway, that's kind of that little notion there. I think it doesn't happen just yet. I'll wait until we get to the scene I'm talking about later with their plot line before I get into my rant about them.
Okay, yeah. So he, later that night, I guess, he basically calls her up and says that he'll take the job. And then he, like, takes this poster off of his wall, and there's a, like, a dent or, like, a hole in the drywall, and he just starts repeatedly banging his head into it.
Yeah.
And that's like, okay, well, that's weird. That's not very healthy behavior. And they don't, I mean, they don't really explain anything else. It's just like, I guess that's something he does, because clearly there's a big hole, and that's his head spot. You know, I think, I don't know. That was just...
Yeah, he gets upset after, I think he does call her at that night, and he basically sets up that it's going to cost $500. So maybe it's lack of nerves, or he feels stupid, but obviously there's some sort of problem with him, because this is obviously the first time he's done it, because this is like a small crater on the side of their wall.
Yeah, it's just... Like, it was kind of funny, but it wasn't
all that funny. I thought it was, yeah. Like, I don't know. You don't know if it's supposed to be disturbing or funny. Like,
yeah, because then in the next scene, to go along with this whole, like, is this supposed to be funny or not, is we see Walter getting up the next morning, and he's taking a shower, and the beaver is still on his hand. He's, like, blow-drying his hair, and he's blow-drying the beaver. And it's, like, it's just weird, and it's...
He even like shoves the blow dryer up the beaver's ass, and then the beaver like turns around and looks at him like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "Okay, so they're trying to be like kind of goofy with this."
Yeah,
I don't get it.
So he goes
with the comedy.
Yeah, so Walter goes to work, and this is like, "Oh, this should be interesting." And he goes to work early, and he puts these cards on everyone's desk that basically say the person who has the beaver on their hand is doing it for therapeutic purposes, or it basically explains what he's doing, and he's supposed to be like the CEO,
yeah,
or president of this company. And I'm like, even if you had a note from a doctor saying that this is what you were doing, you would be immediately removed from power from any sizable company, because nobody wants a crazy person in charge of their company.
Dude, stocks would drop immediately. People would walk the hell... that's the thing, too, which I thought was hilarious about this. This whole company thing, I'm like, the whole plot for that business should not even be in the story. I get it, like, he's got to have something that helps him. But it's like, the fact that this this takes away from the story, in my opinion, as well, because He basically walks in and everyone buys it. He goes in and he sets up... First off, he uses a giant dry erase board to not announce a meeting because apparently in 2011 they didn't have email. and I just thought that was ridiculous. Like, there's this giant dry erase board thing on the front of the lobby and it's like, mandatory meeting, 9 a.m. And it's like, okay, no. And then, yeah, and then he hands out all these cards. Like, yeah, you would be replaced immediately. Nobody would have confidence in you. There would be some quarter of... board of directors that'd be like, you're voted off the island, you're the weakest link. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, everyone's like, no one, yeah, as soon as this gets out to the press, it doesn't matter what you're, yeah, I don't know. So that whole thing is just ridiculous, and I don't know.
Yeah, so we leave that, we go back to the son and the oldest son, and he's out with Jennifer Lawrence trying to get to know her and just kind of figure out what to do about this whole speech. And also kind of obvious he's got a little crush on her, so kind of finding reasons to hang out with her. And you find out that Jennifer Lawrence, Nora's character, got in trouble on grade school for tagging or being a graffiti artist. And she shows him some of her artwork up in the attic. And she goes through some bedroom that he asks, whose is this? And she just kind of blows him off. And I thought it was pretty obvious. Like, oh, this is probably like a dead sibling or something like that. Which let her find out, like, yeah, that's exactly what it was. Dead brother. And so that's just kind of like the next step of that, where they're kind of starting to grow a little closer. She's kind of opening up to him. And back at home, we got a dinner with the family and the beaver. And the son, he kind of gets pissed and just kind of like... he's the only one who's like, this is ridiculous. Like, how am I the only one who doesn't think that this man is insane, more or less?
Yeah, and he even puts up with it. I mean, he like snaps about it a little bit, but I mean, I think he eats alone on the couch or whatever, instead of eating with the family. So you obviously can tell that he's still not cool with his dad. And I going back to the whole like J Law. This is that's actually the scene where I rolled my eyes 1,000 times during that banter between Nora and Porter, because it felt like every teenage movie plot ever. Like, there's this popular girl who's, you know, got an undiscovered dark side that she doesn't share, and you know, this undiscovered writer guy, teenager boy who, you know, obviously has a chip on his shoulder, is trying to find hope in a relation. It's like, oh my god, like, I feel like this is so lazy, and it's yeah I called it Trope City, I think, at some point in this film, because it's like they didn't even, I mean, give me something at least a little bit different. This is like the most basic ass like a teenage coming of age story that, you know, what, she's all that kind of crap. I don't know, like, all that's kind of shit. It's like all that's what this relationship all of a sudden turned into. Like, it could have been something a little bit more interesting, but no, they just went with the most like obvious thing that's been done 1,000 times before. And yeah, and then it goes back to the dinner where he's pissed off and Jodie Foster is just sinking her career along with Mel Gibson, apparently.
But the only thing that's kind of going well at this point is sort of the relationship between Walter and his younger son, who are starting to bond and begin woodworking, because that's what beavers do. Carve wood. So he starts carving wood with his son and getting really into that. Like, so I don't know if Walter, I guess he must have had these skills already, or the beaver must have taught them to him, whichever that was about. And then he gets the bright idea, Walter does, that his toy company, their next big product that he wants them to completely produce and have ready to be sold in 6 weeks, is a children's wood carving set.
I did. Yeah.
I don't know. I've never worked in manufacturing, but I don't think it's physically possible to create a product from scratch and have it on store shelves within like 6 weeks.
Not only that, this was a frigging block of wood with woodworking tools. Like, this is not something you would... I just couldn't believe it. And that's again where like everyone's just like shaking their heads like, yeah, yeah. He said give him 2 weeks to cut. You know, that was something he said when they had that big 9 a.m. meeting and everyone revealed that, oh, hey, I'm the guy with the puppet hand and I'm your boss. Don't walk out, which I would have immediately done. I'd been like shopping immediately, throw my resume to anybody who'd listen. He's like, yeah, we're going to do this thing where a beaver is going to be the guy who sells the block of wood with wood carving tools. And I'm like, no, nobody would buy this. This shit's already available at like probably every store known to man. You know, I'm sure there's a ton of that kind of crap, especially at like, you know, I don't know, parks or something, like where like Boy Scout supplies are sold or something. This is kind of stuff everybody would normally go through, I would think, if given the chance. But it's like, I just don't see it being sold as some kind of crazy toy. And that's what they try to sell this in this movie. And I'm like, no, that's not how this works. This is like some, I don't know. Oh, yeah, again,
like wood carving tools are dangerous. Like, you can't give them to a child and expect it to be like this is the exact opposite type of toy that would be made today. Like, now you can't make anything that's even remotely dangerous. And this is like, you're giving them like metal tools. But that's what he gets his company on board, and production of the beaver kit or whatever the hell it's called. You know, I really thought we were going to be done saying beaver so much after Zombievers, but I guess I have no one to blame but myself. But anyway, so he's back at home, and his wife is starting to get a little bit more suspicious with this whole beaver thing, and kind of starts asking him about how things are going with the doctor, and he just kind of continues to lie and say that it's an ongoing process. But it's obvious that she's kind of starting to get a little, like, suspicious about this whole thing.
Oh, yeah, and we get a great montage of them, like, banging constantly with a beaver on his hand. They're in, like, the shower together, making out, and the beaver's on his hand still in the shower. And I'm like... I was detached so far from this movie. I felt like I was in another dimension watching, like you said, like, this isn't Earth. Wherever this is, like, in the movie, like, well, no.
It's weird because, I guess it's weird because everybody else is so normal, but they're just so easily overlooking this one obviously huge, psychotic individual.
Right. Like, this is not something you would just be like, oh, I could get used to it. Like, no, dude, you have a giant beaver on your hand, and you will not remove it in any circumstance, including being intimate with your wife in the shower. Like, I just don't...
Yeah. So then they're getting ready, Walter and his wife, to go out to some kind of, like, fancy dinner. And,
oh, it's their 20th anniversary dinner.
Yeah, so it's their anniversary dinner. And they're both, you know, really chipper and happy. And then Walter pulls out a little mini beaver tuxedo or suit.
Yeah.
And which she's kind of like, can't you leave him at home? Like, this should just be the two of us because it's our Anna. Which, this is like a flip. Like, okay, so you're okay with having a threesome with a beaver puppet, but you're not okay with him bringing it to dinner, which he's been doing, you know, for at least a week, probably. And he kind of agrees. And you can pretty much immediately see that he starts to revert back to his sort of depressive state. You know, he's hanging his head. He's kind of
moping. I mean, he does a good job. And that's, you know, that's again where, like, the acting isn't that bad. Is because, like, Mel Gibson does a pretty good job at switching between this, like, overconfident, or not overconfident, but just very confident beaver guy. And then whenever he switches back to standard Walter, he gets really kind of quiet and meek and doesn't, and kind of impish, and, you know, he's definitely switched back to that when they go to dinner.
Yeah, and then we get back to Porter and Nora, and he basically, they're kind of out like on a date, and he surprises her by bringing her to this like big wall on like the side of a warehouse or something, and gets out like a box full of different spray paint. It was like, hey, surprise, I'm gonna let you commit a crime tonight.
I know you've always wanted to.
Yeah, and then like, so she's like, I don't want to do this, and then he takes a can of spray paint out and spray paints R.I.P. Brian.
I know, I started laughing at that point because I'm like,
fucking kidding me? Like, I mean, I guess this guy is supposed to be socially awkward, but I mean, who can think that this is a good idea to do with, like, this girl that you've got a serious crush on?
On the first date, no less. Like, yeah. And he turns around, he's like, oh, this is what you've always wanted to say but couldn't.
Yeah.
Because your brother's dead. And I'm like, oh my god. Like, I'm like, dude, what? So, yeah, and then the cops show up.
Yeah. And then pretty predictably, you know, so they both end up getting arrested. And you're thinking like, oh, well, that's probably going to put a little bit of a damper on their relationship. Oh, god. Yeah, that was just like, who? Never mind. I'm moving on.
Well, then we're back to the dinner with Jodie Foster, or I should say Meredith and Walter.
Yeah, I'll let you take it from there.
And it's obvious that things are going a little different than planned. It looks like he was able to bring the beaver along, but not allowed to use him to speak, because the entire time, I don't know if you noticed this, but the beaver is chomped onto the table. So I guess that meant that he was allowed to bring the beaver, but you couldn't, which they don't ever say, but you just kind of assume that's what happened, because he's talking very meekly, kind of like, you know, nodding, saying, she asked him, like, how's work going? And he's like, good, busy. Like, that's, you know, very quick one-word answers. And then she hands him a present, which turns out to be the memory box that he helped make with his youngest kid, Stuart, I think. Or Henry, I'm sorry. Henry was the youngest son. And he's got, like, a little, obvious little kid painting all with markers all around it. And you can tell he's kind of starting to get really uncomfortable. And inside is a memory box. It's a memory box, and inside of it is pictures of, I guess, back when Walter wasn't a depressed guy. And she's saying, like, we miss that guy, and you were so wonderful then. And he starts having, like, a panic attack. He starts, like, breathing heavily, freaking out. And then finally the beaver lets go of the table, and he's like, what are you doing? Like, all right, are you happy, woman? Are you, you know, he almost killed himself. What are you, you know? And then that's where you can kind of see that, I think this is where they make the beaver all of a sudden, now it's definitely turned to this, like, the beaver once was maybe helping him, now it's, like, in control of him in a way. And kind of, it becomes this, like, weird, I don't know how to describe it, almost like a, like, codependent, like, negative relationship with the beaver.
It's just a shield of just, like, a buffer between himself and, like, reality.
Yeah.
And so it's like when he's presented with reality, he just goes back to being depressed, and then the beaver, like, lashes out. And again, it's like, I don't know, because it's like you're trying to be serious with this, but he's got a beaver on his hands. How serious can it be? Kind of thing. But he storms out, but then they get called about the son being in jail, so they're going back to pick him up.
Oh yeah, and they're in a restaurant, mind you. Like, I if I was like the maitre d' or whatever, they'd have been kicked out before even being seated. I'd be like, dude, you got a puppet on your hand. It ain't coming.
Yeah, you imagine like him going up to this fancy restaurant and like the maitre d' just being like, no.
Yeah, like, this, like, I get it, maybe it's like a Taco Bell or some shit, but no, this is like a legit restaurant. I don't think they would have, like, you have to, like, it's obviously like a dress code, and probably no hand puppets is just a
part of that dress code. Kind of goes without saying.
Yeah.
So they get into a fight, they go get to the son, and the son gets into a fight, and, like, the dad pushes the son into the wall, and then so the wife is basically like,
don't hurt my son. Oh, and Nora, J-Law, Nora sees the dad with the beaver on the hand, too. So that's why they fight, yeah. I think. Porter's like, I'm going to kick your ass, Dad, because you're killing my already doomed chances with this girl I like. So
yeah. And then we get a news report that shows that the beaver wood carving kit is like the toy of the century. Yeah.
Woodchipper, like, toy craze. Yeah, and that's again too, it's like, no.
Well, to me it's like the whole purpose of this should have been that he needs to face his own problems and he can't hide behind the beaver, so having the beaver be responsible for a huge business success sort of subverts that whole, like, plot point.
Because oh yeah, like, I think
the fact that it's the toy is selling is almost like justifying why he should continue to listen to the beaver. But I don't know. Maybe I'm thinking too much about it.
Well, no. I mean, this also adds a whole nother, like, aspect to the story that I think takes away from how, like, that, like, where they should have gone drama or comedy, but they definitely leaned heavy on the drama. And it's like this almost takes away some of the pain that this could have been, because throughout this whole film, there's no like worry about financial issues. And like, if that had also happened, like, and that's what would happen if Mel Gibson was actually suffering from, or Walter was suffering from like an actual schizophrenic break or something like that, where he's seeing or talking to another thing. This likely, more often than not, like 1,000 to 1 odds or even more maybe, would never have happened. And now he not only did it happen and everyone went along with it, but there is a huge financial windfall for him. So that just takes away any possibility of there being like, oh, financial stress that's put on the relationship that could have, I think, been used to add like a more interesting plot to this. Like, oh, he lost his job because he's a freaking goofy asshole with a puppet on his hand. Like, I don't know. You're right. Like, it's like it almost enabled more antics from the puppet or the beaver, and the fact that it is a beaver, and the fact that everyone went along with it. Yeah. Also, at some point, I think in this, Porter bashes his head against the wall so much that the hole pops on the side of the house. I think that happened after they fight before the toy crate scene, because their house is made of like cardboard.
Yeah, and then Walter kind of talks to his coworkers, and well, the beaver tells the coworkers that he, the beaver, is real.
And he's going to go on like Today Show with
him. Which he does. So he gets interviewed by Matt Lauer, and which is so surreal, because I thought Matt Lauer did a pretty good job. Like, I've seen a lot of interviews with him, and he was asking like some hard, kind of to the point questions. You know, he was like, "So clearly you've had some issues with depression, and this is a way to deal with that." And the beaver just gives this giant speech. Like this, how he's helping Walter and do all this stuff, and then you go on this montage of all these like television appearances that Walter's doing with the beaver. He's being interviewed by Jon Stewart. He's on all these magazine covers for all these like successful businessman magazines and things like that. It's
like GQ and Inc. and shit. And the thing too that drives me nuts is like he pushed also in this speech. I think the one that he was on with Matt Lauer is he pushes. Or he negatively talks about his kids and his wife, about how they were like baggage that was holding him back. And like, I just can't believe that, like, then again, it's like, I guess you kind of understand now that the beaver is not good. I mean, you kind of get that from, you know, earlier, but...
Right, it's just kind of weird that like, but also while they're really emphasizing that he's continuing to have all this success.
Right, and all of society is buying it. Like, the fact that GQ is publishing a magazine about the beaver and Inc. is the... It's like, what? No. How did this happen? Like, this is another dimension. This is not reality.
Yeah, but then things kind of start to turn. As he's being interviewed, you're starting to see that despite all the success... You know, probably because he's apart from his family, is that Walter is becoming depressed again despite having the beaver there. So the beaver is kind of being the way he has been throughout the whole movie, but Walter's kind of slumping down. They even show a radio interview where, like, he's kind of, like, got his head below the desk and he just has his hands stuck up talking into the microphone, and the host is like, "What are you doing, man? Like, this is a radio interview. You can cut the puppet crap out."
Right. Well, also, I guess we should point out this. At this stage in the game, his wife and kids have left him again. Like, they moved out and left him with the house.
Right. Yeah, so that's kind of when he started getting depressed again, despite still having the beaver.
Because she also found out that this was not a prescription. This was actually, like, obvious. She called the doctor. The doctor was like, "No, you actually probably should get some serious help, because this is a big, big red flag kind of thing." So, finally, after, you know, surprisingly, again, nobody Googled this, nobody looked it up, this turns out, not a real way to, you know, you do therapy, but everyone went along with it, despite national press.
The fact that it took that long to be like, for some psychologist to come forward and be like, "There's no such thing as beaver puppet therapy."
So she leaves, and then he goes gets back into a bad state, but for some reason, he's still using the puppet, even though his life is miserable.
So he ends up getting into a fight with the puppet, and he calls the wife for help, and the wife's kind of freaking out, and he's like the son. For I kind of missed this, but for some reason, the oldest son ends up basically saying, "Like, I'll go and check on him."
Well, she basically runs into Porter's room, and he looks like he's in a bad state. Like, he's just like blankly staring into space. You can kind of tell that he's falling into a depression, especially after losing favor with Nora. So she runs in and says, "Your little brother's acting up. I can't leave him here by himself because I, you know." But I guess she doesn't want to expose him to whatever the hell's going on over at the house. So she's like, "Porter, can you go and check on your dad? I'm worried about him." Yeah. So that's why he goes.
Right. So as that's happening, Walter's fighting with the beaver, and he goes into the garage where all of his woodworking equipment is, and he turns
and he
on.
Builds the... a, he builds a.
He
was. Well, yeah. Well, first of all, it gets. Well, they, first, I just this whole scene. I'm like, I don't know. Again, is this comedy? Is supposed to be funny? But I don't think so. I think this is supposed to be like really messed up kind of thing because they have a fight where he's like yelling at the puppet. The puppet's yelling at him. They fight. He's bashing his own hand against the wall. Like he slams his own puppet hand in the door. Then like the puppet smashes a like ukulele over his head or something, and he gets knocked out again. And when he comes to, they kind of seem like he's got a black eye. This is when Porter's on the way to go check on him because he calls after the phone call, whatever. And he's like, he starts talking to him, and the beaver's like, "You know, I've only wanted you to be healthy. I'm the only one that actually cares about you." And then he's like, "Do you care if I go downstairs? I can't sleep. I need to work on something." And then he goes down and he starts building stuff with woodworking, and it turns out it's a little baby coffin.
I missed that. Sets, I guess I jumped.
Because yeah, he sets the beaver in the coffin, and the beaver's like, "What are you doing?"
So this part taken by itself, this whole scene is pretty funny, but it's like it's happening in a world that's supposed to be real. So he's building this coffin. I guess I missed that part. But the next part that he does is he goes and he turns on a buzzsaw.
Yeah,
and you hear it go like you hear it buzzing. But then, so when the sun shows up, he opens up the garage door and...
Well, you hear him scream, too.
Yeah, you hear him scream and you see the dad's there on the ground. They don't really ever show it. I guess they didn't want to foot the bill for any kind of special effects or, like, makeup or whatever. But he cut his hand off. Like, so the next time...
Yeah, from, like, the beaver up. So, like, yeah, from the elbow down, pretty much.
Yeah. So the next time we see Walter, he's basically in the mental ward. And he's got, like, a prosthetic hand. So there's that. Something we glossed over, I think, earlier is that the son kind of ends up getting caught with the whole selling papers thing. A classmate gets caught with a paper that's not his and basically snitches on Porter, which then ends up kind of putting Jennifer Lawrence into a tough spot. They have a whole graduation scene. With her where she basically admits that he wrote most of the speech for her and there's like nothing really said or any consequences about it. So that's kind of like an abrupt end to that storyline. And this is all kind of happening in like a final montage and kind of as she's given her speech and at the very end of it, the son ends up going to see the dad and kind of makes amends with him and they kind of hug it out and seems like everything's going to be okay.
Yeah, I think there's like the ending is they're on a roller coaster together. And J-Law and him get back together. I don't know if you saw that, but like...
Yeah, I guess there is like... There's like a flash forward where the whole family's at like an amusement park.
Yeah, and she forgave him for what happened for the Rip Brian, because I don't know if you saw that part, but where she paints that huge mural and gives it to him.
Yeah, yeah. So
and, like, so there's definitely, like, an amend, so they get back together, and, yeah, her speech, though, was, like, a weird, like, super depressing admission of guilt, and I can't move on because my brother's dead. But you aren't alone is like the end of it. Like you're not alone in this pain kind of thing, which I guess is the whole point of the movie. Because then there was some talk in the beginning about how Mel Gibson had issues with his own father or Walter. So then like I guess that's definitely like a mirror of his own son having issues with him. But then they hug it out and there's a roller coaster at the end. And because life's a roller coaster.
Yep. And that was pretty much it. So yeah, it's just a weird. kind of mishmash of genres, and it seemed like it couldn't really decide what it wanted to be. And I think it would have been better if they went like a much like a straight comedy route, because if it's supposed to be real, then it's just not believable how the rest of the characters are acting. Because this guy,
it almost does, like, it makes everyone in the film look like complete idiots. Like it's not even, nobody would have, like, there may have been one or two people you could pull that off on who are like really believing in you, kind of thing. We're like, okay, you know, I don't know, like, but the fact that like America bought that, or the world bought it, because, like, you know, you're getting interviews with Inc. and GQ, where literally if it was, it'd be like, you know, a look inside the mind of a, you know, broken CEO or something, like, you know, or, you know, some kind of derogatory expose, because they kind of touch on that with the Matt Lauer interview, where he's like, this is obviously you dealing with depression, but I don't know, like, this movie it's just confusing. It felt like just kind of stupid and ridiculous, and you're right, like, I feel like it could have been something. But they didn't really flesh it out before they went rolling with the film. Like, if they'd have done the puppet thing maybe a little bit better, or made it like a schizophrenia, like kind of what we were talking about beginning, where maybe instead of it being like an actual puppet on his hand, he maybe has a stuffed animal he carries around, or, you know, and doesn't talk, but maybe he talks to it, or talks through it, or holds it up at people. But it's like the whole idea of a hand puppet was just so bizarre, not to mention the fact that, like, throughout this film, I kept thinking, like, his hand must smell like shit. Also, how would he be able to do any normal tasks at all? Because all of a sudden he's going from being a two-handed human being to a guy with a right hand and a guy with a puppet for a left hand. So, like, he's naked in the shower. So did he, like, take off the puppet and put it back on? He's doing all these activities. Like, it would actually really hinder your wife, or your life. Like, how do you button a T-shirt with a puppet hand? Like, all this stuff would be very difficult. It just seems to sort of flow. Like, it's not no big deal throughout the whole movie. And they don't ever touch on the fact that, like, oh, I can't do this as easy anymore. Like, make a sandwich or, like, you know, something, because I've got a gross-ass puppet for a hand. Yeah. So that was the movie. I think this was not a cheesy movie. Maybe in some ways cheesy, but, like, I think it wanted to be serious, a dramedy, comedy, drama, black comedy, I don't know.
I think it probably would have been better if they tried to make it cheesy.
Yeah. I guess you got to be careful, though, because then you're starting to make fun of, like, mental illness, and, like, nobody really wants to do that. I mean, it's like, I think they were maybe trying to go for, like, another Forrest Gump kind of thing, or, you know, like, where they kind of...
It kind of reminded me of, there was a, I don't know if you saw, but a movie called The Lobster.
No.
With Colin Farrell. But this is, and this is to my point about where everyone else is, like, in The Lobster, basically, if you don't get, like, married by the time you're a certain age, they turn you into an animal.
Oh. Is this, yeah, like a sci-fi?
It is, but it's, like, it's, there's not a whole lot of, like, science in it. It's just kind of like they turn you into an animal. They don't really explain how or why. And so the whole movie's basically about Colin Farrell going to this hotel where people go to try to meet somebody when they're very limited on how much time they have left. And then they spend their nights hunting people who have ran away from the place, who don't want to be turned into animals. And it's, so it's really weird, but it's actually, like, it was a really good movie. It was really neat and interesting, but everybody's in on it. Like, everybody is part of this world, and in The Beaver, it just seemed like you have the world, and then you have Mel Gibson, who's doing something totally different, and everybody's just like, yeah, okay, he's got a beaver for a puppet.
Yeah, I'll buy that. I'm, and the CEO comes in one day, he's like, hey, everybody, I'm your CEO, and I got a puppet for him, and he talks, he's the one who you're going to talk to and address now. Just call me The Beaver. I would just walk away. I would just walk away. Like, I don't know. And the whole thing of, like, you have 2 weeks to work with me, and then if you don't, he says something like, you know, oh, you'll get severance pay and a glowing recommendation. I'm like, everyone would quit then. Like, nobody would. I don't know. I couldn't buy it. And they didn't do a good enough job of selling it. I feel like they were really trying to make this, like, a interesting look into mental illness and family relationships and, you know, the dynamic of father and son, because, you know, oh, Well, there was like a line in there was like, when I was a kid, Dad, I wanted to be just like you. And then as I grew older, you know, I wanted to be anything but. And it's like, duh. Like, everybody goes through that kind of a phase, probably. Like, not everybody, but I mean, that's not like so bizarre or different. Like, I don't know. It's like a common issue that a lot of people go through. It's like, oh, I really like my dad as a kid because, oh, he's my dad. He's my hero. And then you grow up and you learn that, you know, that your dad's a human and has flaws. And then all of a sudden you're like, I don't like my dad as much. I don't know. It just... The way they sold it was so, I guess, so boring and so basic. Like, they didn't, and they could have gone somewhere with it, but it was just Trope City, and they did a lot of just lazy writing, and I felt like it was, I don't know. I gave it a 1 out of 5 cheese wheels. I might have raised it to 2 after talking with it, but I would never want to watch that movie, and I don't really think I could recommend it.
No, I wouldn't recommend it. I came out at a 2 out of 5, and that's really just looking at, in comparison to some of the other movies, you know, other movies that, I mean, Shark Lake, I gave a 1.5 out of 5. Drive Hard, Hard Target 2, Gallo Walkers, like, I mean, most of these were pretty cheesy movies, but these were all movies that I didn't like. But they weren't David and Goliath bad. You know, because there was decent acting, and heck, I think it had a better beaver puppet than the real beavers and zombievers. But yeah, I can't recommend it. It definitely wasn't enjoyable. There's a lot of, I don't know, just whatever to it. So it's not terrible. It's definitely not good. It's just sort of, it exists. And
yeah, and it doesn't know what it wants to be. And
yeah, like, it's not so bad that it makes it entertaining to even sit. Like, it wouldn't even be fun to, like, sit around and make fun of this movie, because there's not enough to, like, laugh at about, like, how ridiculous it is. It's just kind of like, it's just weird.
Yeah. So. And it's, yeah, it does. It goes from like, hey, this is kind of funny, to hey, this is actually kind of disturbing, to hey, this just doesn't make any damn sense. I don't know. Like, there were so many of those scenes in the movie where I'm like, I don't know what this is trying to do. Like, is this? Figure your shit out, Bieber. Like, whoever wrote it, and you know, Jodie Foster directed it. I think that was a big shock too. Like, I almost felt like I got slapped in the face because I didn't know that until they rolled credits and it was like directed by Jodie Foster, and I'm like, what? What? Like, how would you? I don't know. I get, and again, with the whole like what was going on with Mel Gibson in that time frame of like he was kind of this pariah in Hollywood, and I guess this was sort of like somebody trying to be like, hey, here, let's do this together. What do you think? I don't know.
Well, it worked out well for him because he was just nominated for an Oscar this year. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he is a good actor and director. I mean, I'll be the first to admit I love Braveheart. I know that's like a, you know, some love it or hate it movie, but I loved it. And I think he's a good actor, too. I mean, I like that. I liked, what was the one he did with Apocalypto? That was pretty good.
I don't know if I ever saw that.
Yeah, it was weird, but the fact that he did it, you know, I don't know. Did he also do The Passion of the Christ? Was that him?
Yeah, that was him.
Yeah, that was kind of a tough one. I was raised Catholic, so were you. So we got enough of that growing up.
Yeah. All right, were you ready to know what's next?
Yeah, I'm ready. Hit me.
All right, so this one is also available on Netflix. It's a new movie. It just came out this year. 2017. Roger Corman's Death Race 2050.
Nice. So, I haven't seen any of the Death Race movies. Have you?
No, I don't think so. So yeah, this is like, I guess it is a sequel, but I don't think it doesn't have anyone from the original in it. So I'm not counting those. So we're just gonna jump straight to Death Race 2050. The quick little blurb here. In this dystopian sequel, kills equal points in a violently gory annual cross-country race sponsored by the United Corporations of America. So, going back into the world of dystopian futures, hopefully getting back to the quality of Turbo Kid and Bounty Killers and movies of that sort.
We need another Wolf Cop.
Yeah, we do need another Wolf Cop. One day. Maybe when Wolf Cop 2 comes out.
Yeah. All right. Well, with that note, thanks for tuning in. If you have any suggestions, hit us on Twitter, Facebook, or email us at hello@cheeseflix.com, and we will look forward to watching cheesy movies along with you and grilling the hell out of them. On that note, my name's Logan.
And I'm Andrew.
Thanks for tuning in.
Well, here at last, dear friends, on the shores of the sea, comes the end of our podcast. Go in peace. I will not say, do not weep. Not all tears are an evil.